Thanks for joining us on Battle Walks as we walk across the great battlefields of Europe. If you're enjoying the show, why not become a member? Every week, you'll receive exclusive bonus episodes available only to subscribers, and you can listen to all our episodes completely ad-free. Click on the link in the show notes to join us via Acast Plus.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the podcast, another live episode. Pete, we are still on the battlefields. Well, the end of a fantastic tour. Here we are in Paris. Mate, it's been a pretty exciting week, hasn't it?
It's been fairly full on. In fact, my voice is marginally croaky. I have a cup of coffee with me. But golly, what a time we've had.
Well, last time we caught up with the dear listeners, we were in Ypres, having just had one day on the battlefields, the first day of the tour. And since then, geez, we've done so much, mate. This is the Matt and Pete signature tour. And we have thrown in interesting little sites. We've explored the key Australian sites on the battlefields. It was mostly, I've got to say, with a fantastic group of people. It was just such a great experience.
Yeah, I think it's the clients that make it, obviously. And we had a great group of people. They gelled together very well. It was just fantastic. It's been, and with the fantastic experience and with the added little bonus locations we went to, brilliant.
We're here in the lobby of the hotel in Paris, which is why it's a bit noisy, but we just wanted to get our thoughts down before we part ways. And I've actually, this piece of paper you can hear there is actually the itinerary, because we've done so much. I didn't want to risk missing out on something. So what we thought we'd do is this, as this post-tour, we've got someone yelling at French behind us.
Yeah.
This little post-tour report, we thought we'd just go through what we did day-to-day and talk about some of the exciting things. So we told you about our first day of V weapon sites and 1918 battlefields. But then we got up to Ypres, a great town, one of my favourites. Pete, I always loved being up there. We stayed in a great hotel. And first day, we went out and explored the battlefields of the salient.
Yeah, I mean, I love it. I love starting off in the city itself. And Ypres itself, every time we go, something's changing. At the moment, we've got a bit of a downside, I suppose, that the Menin Gate's covered over for 2 years while they're doing a lot of work on it. But it needs doing structural work. But even that makes it interesting because it's different. There's something different to look at. Clothall also under work. They're putting new roads in and new beautiful new pavers in some of the areas of Ypres. So it's being improved constantly. And I think that's part of the fun, is seeing how it's changing year on year. There's always something different. So a chat about the town, its rebuilding, and then out onto the battlefields and to Hill 60, one of my favourite locations. And
just before we move on with there, one thing I wanted to say about Ypres that I think is that this is it's the same story that's been happening since 1918.
Yep.
It's the continuing story of Ypres embracing its wartime heritage. The first pilgrims came as soon as the war was over. Even during the war, there were pilgrims coming over. So you know, the work they're doing is part of that evolving story of Ypres. Not celebrating, but embracing its wartime heritage. So it's great to see.
And it's really what I like, is because we are a continuation of that, literally. You know, our clients, the pilgrims, whatever you wish to call them nowadays, I suppose pilgrims not used so often, but the visitors, the people that come to the city, they're following the footsteps of those that came right the way from 1920 or even earlier. I enjoy that, and certainly I try to explain that and to explain to the clients that they are following in something that has gone on since the end of the war.
Well, as you said, out into the battlefields, Hill 60, a great spot, a preserved landscape of craters and mine craters and shell holes and trenches and pillboxes. It's great to actually start with a walk around that sort of tortured landscape to give some insight into what it was like.
And I also give my famous and much anticipated talk on concrete of the Great War while we're there.
Well, if we've got to spare 3 hours, let's do it now. Actually, no, let's not do it now. But you're going to have to come on a tour with Pete and stand on a pillbox on Hill 60 to hear. But, we jest, but it is actually
part of the story.
A very key part of the story about how these massive concrete emplacements got built. The mine craters are always interesting. The big mine crater. Everyone's seen Beneath Hill 60, the movie. And I think people get a little overwhelmed when they actually walk. You can walk down into that crater. It doesn't look like a typical crater because sort of half the side of the hill's blown off. But it's still pretty moving to stand there in the bottom of that crater and think about the Battle of Messines and all the people that still lie under your feet.
It is. And I think that's one of the key parts of it is knowing that we are in a landscape that hasn't ever been turned over. It hasn't ever been worked upon. It hasn't ever been dug. So we know that, unfortunately, and movingly, that there are people still all around us there. What we haven't mentioned is the weather has been particularly extraordinarily warm for the whole of... We've had no rain, it's been beautiful weather for the whole of the tour, which, you have to get used to all weathers in the tours, but it does help, and especially when you're going to Hill 60 and into the crater if it's dry, and it was beautiful weather, beautiful sunny days.
We had to run the tour later than we normally do because of the Rugby World Cup. Was sort of getting in the way a little bit, but so we picked October, and Pete and I had the discussion, didn't we, was it going to be too cold at that time of the year? You know, how would we adjust to... It could come, it could be frosty. And cold winds and short days, but it's been the opposite. It's been 25 degrees every day and sunny. We've gotten so lucky. We saw poppies out on the battlefield in October.
Yeah, and that is really unusual, and partly led by the extraordinary hot conditions last year that put the poppies out of sync. And so lots of poppies on the battlefield all over. Very, very unusual.
During our day on the Salient, we went to the fantastic Passchendaele 1917 Museum, which is always worth going and checking out, gives you a good insight. But then out into the killing fields of the Battle of Passchendaele, and it's always one of the bonus sites we like to go through is where Frank Hurley took his famous photo of the Australians sheltering in the railway embankment during the Battle of Passchendaele. That's a wonderful then and now moment, Pete. And I think it's something that Australian visitors in particular really are moved by, standing in that spot with those poor, dead and wounded Australians in the height of the Battle of Passchendaele.
I'm never one for carrying lots of photographs around with me, but just sometimes there are iconic photos of Australia in the Great War, and it is nice just occasionally to actually go to a site and say, look, this isn't just close, this is the location, and we do that as much as we can. So, yeah, very, very moving to be where Frank Hurley took some of his iconic photographs.
And then, of course, the two big cemeteries, Tynecott, the largest Commonwealth military cemetery in the world, which is always... overwhelming when people first see it, but also Langemark, the German cemetery, is always an inclusion. I mean, we insist on including Langemark German cemetery when we're on the battlefields because it just tells a completely different story to what you get from the Commonwealth cemeteries.
Yeah, and I'm going to do a little plug here for an author friend of mine, Roger Stewart, who's actually produced a book on Langemark Cemetery, which has enhanced my visits going there an awful lot personally.
Yeah, it's outstanding.
Great it is, book. And it tells really the story in detail about the creation of Langemark, and it's not always quite what you see, man. We won't go into the whole thing here, but it's just an interesting cemetery. And
it's a cemetery that's been shaped by two world wars. What happened in the First World War. It was shaped by the relationship between Belgium and Germany after the Second World War, and then of course the rise of the Nazi Party in the 30s had a big influence on that cemetery. It was a cemetery that Hitler visited personally in 1940 during his tour of the battlefield. So it's an extraordinary place where several different eras of history come colliding together to tell that German story, but because of that, it's one that we insist on going to on every tour that we do.
It's fascinating, and just by the by, nothing to do with this tour, but I literally had the information this morning when I got up about somebody wanting to go to the German cemetery at Menin. I haven't been. I have to say I haven't been, so I had to look at that this morning. So that's part of the enjoyment of doing all of this, is looking at something different. So, yeah, German cemetery at Menin I'll be looking at later on in the year.
And then the next day on the battlefields, which was day four, again, a bit of a bonus day. The good thing about the signature tour is all our tours are good and operate at a good pace, but on our signature tour we have a couple of extra days in there to do more things, and this day was a good example of that. We gave the group some time off to explore Ypres because it's well worth checking out, but then in the afternoon headed out to the battlefield of Messines, which is... a place that we cover on the regular tours, but we don't do it in quite the same depth as we do it on the signature tour. And gee, that's an incredible story, isn't it, Pete?
It is indeed. But you've missed something out. You missed something out.
Cheese. I missed the cheese on the previous day. We have cheese on the previous day. No, we do a lunch stop at the old cheese factory in Passchendaele, and great.
Oddly, it's got a lot of cheese, which is great if you like cheese, which I do.
I do as well. I had 16 different varieties you could sample, and I had all 16. I walked out full of beer and cheese, because they give you beer as well, whether you want one or not. So
what could go wrong? Yeah. What could go wrong?
That is a great stop to our Passchendaele touring day.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's Massine.
Where were we? Massine. No, thank you for mentioning the cheese. Yeah. It would be remiss if we didn't shout out to the cheese factory.
Yeah, so Massine, I have to say, in recent years, I hadn't been up to the top of the tower in the church in Massine, which is, if you can make it to the top, the views are spectacular.
And I was a little worried, Pete, when you came down. You
should have seen me when I got to the top.
Huffing and puffing.
I hate it when people want to ask me questions when I've just climbed up umpteen hundred stairs. But yeah, fantastic views across the Massine. Well, not just the Massine battlefield further, but yeah, well worth the effort. If you find yourself in Massine, then try and get up to the top of the church there. Brilliant.
And we get assistance at Massine from the one and only Simon Luargif, who's the director of Talbot House, which we'll get to in a minute. And Simon comes out and tells us all about the Battle of Massine. Not just the Australian and New Zealand involvement in 1917, but also going right back to when the Germans first occupied in 1914, to Indian troops fighting there, to Scottish troops fighting there. It's a great yarn. He touches on the fact that Hitler was supposedly there during the war, but doesn't dwell too long on that. It's just a really great overview, particularly from a local, to understand their perspective on all this fighting that occurred in their backyard.
I'm just going to say that the British were there as well, just because Matt didn't mention it, but there were some British soldiers there.
Sorry,
as well.
Who? I have to apologise. This is an Australian tour, so we tend to focus on the Australian things. And there is a risk that occasionally it becomes a little bit one-eyed. But we must always remember that we operate as part of the British Army. And, I think it was the running joke, wasn't it, Pete?
It was.
The Brits even here in the war, because we spend so much time talking about the Australians. But we don't want that at the expense of the coalition partners who won the war together. So, yes, the Brits were there as well. Well, I did say Scottish. So
you did.
We touched on it.
It was close.
And then, what did we do? It was a great day. Then Island of Ireland Peace Tower to talk more about the Battle of Massine, perspective of the battlefield.
And discuss the Irish involvement of the 16th Irish Division and 36th. So we had a chat about what was going on.
Are you sure
the
British were here?
Yeah, they were. They were, trust me. And then across to Poppering, a place that my grandfather knew very well during the war. He was based around Poppering. He was in the ammunition column, so I always like going to Poppering.
It's a good spot behind the lines, a place that most people don't get to on their tours, and one you really should visit. And there's some really interesting things to see there. We didn't see it on this tour, but you can go to the death cells where men who would be shot at dawn were held before that terrible sentence was carried out. A really interesting place. But the highlight is, because the town wasn't destroyed, there's a couple of really important houses to see there, including Skindall's and Officers Club. But the one we were focused on, Talbot House, established in 1915 as an everyman's club.
Toc H,
yes, in military abbreviation. And we had a very special visit to Talbot House, which I don't think many people will forget in a hurry. We went and explored the house, and Simon showed us around and gave us a tour. We went through the wonderful museum. But then, cheerio, darling. No, we're not saying goodbye. That was the name of a dinner show?
Well, it's like
a concert party.
It was a concert party. Yeah, a posh concert party.
It was a posh concert party. Yeah, it was wonderful. Talbot House don't do it very often. They only do it a dozen or so times a year. But they got in so many volunteers and set up beautiful, beautifully dressed tables for us for
dinner. Fantastic food.
We had a four-course meal. Yeah. And in between the courses, they told the story of a love-struck couple who were separated by war and by reading letters that they had.
Don't spoil it.
But they had letters in the archive of Talbot House that told this love story. And musical numbers, and it was absolutely fantastic. A real highlight.
Just wonderful. It was excellent.
It's really quite extraordinary. It was one of those things that we'd been told that might be a possibility, and as soon as I heard about it, I thought, we've got to do that.
It's also one of those things that you're just never quite sure. And I read all the spleb, and I thought, is this going to work? Are the people going to enjoy it? Well, loved it. I loved it. It was just fantastic.
It was very, very well done. So, volunteers who played the roles of the people reading the letters out. Wonderful musicians. The musicians were absolutely incredible. And a beautiful meal. A good British meal.
Yep. It had mushy peas.
Mushy peas. Yeah. We had, shepherd's pie and mushy peas? And, it was fantastic. So just a great night out. We were very, very fortunate to get to do that. So that's a bit of a rare occurrence at Talbot House. But if you are going to the battlefields, don't miss Talbot House when you're up in the Epe Salient. It is fantastic. Just a wonderful story. And going up into the attic, Pete, on the rickety stairs. And
And if Simon,
standing in the chapel where so many men had their last service before they went out and died on the battlefields, it's just incredible.
And if Simon's there, have a chat with Simon because he's so passionate. A great guy.
He's an honorary Aussie, so I'm sure there's an Order of Australia not too far in his future. But he does so much for Australia. It's wonderful to have these people on the battlefields who understand and represent us so well. Yeah, so that was Ypres salient. The next day we headed off on the bus bright and early. Heading down to the Somme battlefields, but on the way stopping at a couple of crucial sites. Firstly, the Battle of Fromelles. I mean, even the name just sounds ominous. Fromelles. Yeah. It sounds like from hell. It's well suited because that is just a horrific story. I'm sure most people know the story of the most costly 20 hours in Australian military history.
Well, they could always listen to one of our previous podcasts, couldn't they, really?
Several, in fact. Yes, we walked the battlefield of Fromelles, and it comes up quite often. It's one of the half dozen most important Australian battlefields. And we walk the ground. And again, on this tour, we have time to walk the ground, tell the story. Oh, and I should mention Fred and the poignant moment I had with Fred. His great uncle had been killed at Fromelles, but he had a letter from his great uncle's mate who said that we were both wounded side by side out in no man's land, and we lay out in a shell hole for something extraordinary, like 10 hours or something. And then eventually Bob, or whatever his name was, decided he was going to try and make a go for it back to the Australian lines. And he said as soon as he climbed out of the shell hole, bang, a sniper killed him. So what a horrific story. He was never found, one of the poor buggers who lay out in no man's land. But so we took, we knew roughly where he'd been, so I took Fred out to that site. And as we're walking across the area, I said, I think this is pretty close to where he must have been, my best guess. And Fred put a poppy in the soil, and it was just a nice little moment. Then I looked down, and right at my feet was an unfired 303 round. So a British or Australian round, and who knows? We can only suppose about how that came to be lying in the middle of no man's land, but there's a distinct possibility that was in the ammo pouch of someone who was killed or wounded there. Yeah. It's not the sort of thing people are scattering around, or usually they're not even reloading in the middle of no man's land. So, I mean, so they're just trying to get across. So it's unlikely they'd be stopping and fumbling and reloading. So that well could have come from the pocket of a...
Yeah, very moving.
So to find those things, and the fact that it was unfired, if we found a fired projectile, that would be moving in its own right. But to find an unfired projectile that fell from the pocket of an Australian right on that spot was quite an extraordinary
Fred
moment.
Was very moved, wasn't he? Very moved.
It was one of those special moments. Look on socials, I posted that. It's one of those special moments on the battlefields, and that's why we do it. You must have these every week, Pete. It's incredible.
I've had really strange ones very similar to that, where somebody said to me, Pete, can you just go and find me something, a shrapnel ball, I can perhaps take it back. And I do take two steps of bend down, and I picked up a German button, and I said, even better than the shrapnel ball, there's a German button to take back. And people just utterly blown away. Well, so was I. But you do get that oddities just occasionally.
That's why it helps to go and plant them in advance, Pete, all over the battlefield. People say that to us all the time.
What are you saying?
Did you plant that there? I almost did, in a way, here, because I'd been at the battlefield a week earlier, and I'd found in the Australian line a British pattern helmet, so probably an Australian helmet with a nice, or a chunk of helmet, not a complete one, but a chunk of helmet with a bullet hole straight through the side of it. I found that in the Australian line, and so I did hide that behind a bush so that when the group was there, purely so that when the group was there, I could show them because it was so awesome.
One I prepared earlier, I think that's so nice.
But so it wasn't quite planted, but I did save it so that I could show it to the group because that was quite extraordinary. And we left it there. We left it there at the cemetery, hopefully other people get to see it as well.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
We could go on and on about Frabelle. It's a,
yes,
it is. I won't say it's a highlight of the tour, but it's certainly a moving. Highlight's the wrong word, but it's certainly one of the most moving experiences. Yeah. And it was cold. It was probably 22 degrees, but still freezing. It was a cold wind.
Yeah,
that's always the case at Frabelle. It's always windy and bleak, and there's no glory at that battlefield.
And then we always go to the museum, the Frabelle's museum. They're very well received. They're always well received, and we normally bring packed lunches, and we can eat them inside there, which is great. I always enjoy a visit to the museum.
And then saw, of course, the new cemetery with the bodies from the mass graves. We won't go into this in too much detail. You can hear about it in the other podcast, but a great experience. And then on to Bullacore.
Yep.
Bullacore, another disaster for Australia.
Yeah.
Another horrific battlefield where so many men died. Mm-hmm. And another battlefield where you can get a very good perspective of how the battle unfolded based on the geography, because there's been very little development there and it's still laid out as it was. So,
and that's part of the story, isn't it? The development of memorials there. We've got slow developments of memorials, so we explain that story and then let people have a bit of a walk on the battlefield itself. Great time to come this time of the year because the ploughing's taken place. You've got a right to roam in France, so you can actually wander across as long as you're not disturbing crops, then it's fine. And this time of the year, there's a lot of fields not planted. So, yeah, good time to visit.
So on to Amiens, where we stayed, another lovely dinner. And then the advantage of this tour is we get 2 days to explore the Somme. So we break them quite neatly into Somme 1916 and then Somme 1918, because, of course, the two big battles that occurred there. And the Somme 1916 day, we did what you'd say is a pretty standard Somme tour. We went to the Sunken Road.
Well, it's certainly a standard British tour, but not really done so much by Australian groups. So that's what makes it special, is to take Australian clients, Australian groups, and to do something that is fairly well known for British visitors to the Battle of the Somme. We did the Sunken Lane at Beaumont Hamel, and then the Mine Crater, the Hawthorne, the Ridge Craters. And now very accessible, and that's only fairly recent. So I highly recommend a visit to the Hawthorne Ridge Craters and gave people perspective and knowledge of what was going on in 1916 from the 1st of July onwards. So it helps then for the understanding when we do the Australian bit later on during the day.
We joke around about how focused we are on the Australians, but on the Somme we obviously focus very, very carefully on the big picture, which was the Battle of the Somme and obviously the horrific British experience in those opening days. And you can't tell that story without exploring those British sites. And I think people got it. There was were very emotive.
Yeah, I agree. And it also gives you an opportunity to talk about recruiting. And so I do a bit of a chat about recruiting and the raising of the PALS battalions and its relevance and how Australian battalions are raised. So it starts to pull things together, hopefully.
We had an interesting experience at the Ulster Tower, which we won't linger on, where we had some people representing the...
Pipes and drums.
Yeah, pipes and drums. Representing aspects of Northern Ireland that are controversial. We got to experience that firsthand when a band arrived. But we'll move on from that pretty swiftly. And then, the Australian battlefields, telling the story of the Australians on the Somme at Mouquet Farm and most notably at Pozières. Again, iconic Australian sites.
And a quick visit, of course, to the Tietbal Memorial.
Oh, of course,
looking at the story of the missing, really, and a continuation of the story that we've been telling of the Australian missing, and then we're bringing the story of the missing of the Somme into it as well.
And that was actually a really great experience because we've had a few tours recently where Australians have been less interested in seeing those British sites, and I understand they're short on time, they want to see key Australian sites. We felt we were running out of time in the day as well, so said, we're thinking we'll just do a drive-by of the Tietbal Memorial and not stop. And the coach was, you have to see it, which I thought was fantastic. It's a British memorial, and yet the whole coach was really keen to see it. So good on them. That was absolutely fantastic to see. Because I love going to those sites, and you cannot tell the story of the Battle of the Somme without talking about the British contribution and the British missing.
Exactly.
It was fantastic. What a great day. It's always a Psalm 916 is always a great day.
And unbelievably, we've been getting in on time, which was not the case last year when we did this.
Yeah, if you listen to this podcast from a year ago, you'll hear us talking about, and we were due in at 5 and got in at 7.
Yeah.
But no, we've been bang on time.
We have.
The most punctual group I've ever been with. There was not a late person. They were assembled ready to go 20 minutes before you know, the instruction to move. They were fantastic. It did make it a lot easier.
It did.
It was a decent-sized group, but it made it a lot easier how punctual they were. So we meant we fit more things in. It meant we were back on time. Wasn't too rushed. The following day, Psalm 1918.
Yeah,
and again, a bit of a bonus day because on many tours, the Somme fighting in 16 and 18 is compressed. But here we had a bonus day. So off to Villers-Bretonneux.
Yep.
The huge Australian development that is now Villers-Bretonneux.
Yeah.
The Australian Memorial, the wonderful cemetery there, and of course the somewhat controversial Sir John Monash Centre. Yeah.
Always the disappointment that there are no children waving Australian flags as we enter the village, which is something that is sometimes expected.
It's Sir John Monash Centre is an interesting one because it does tell a very Australian story, which makes you feel proud to be an Aussie, but it also, I won't go into it too much, I've discussed it on other podcasts, but I feel it does detract a little bit from the battlefield experience that it's almost a clinical museum just telling a story about what Australians were doing. It's not related in any way to the memorial just above your heads or the thousands of graves that you can visit. It's just telling an Australian story. So sometimes I think it would be better placed if it was in Canberra at the War Memorial for people who can't get to the battlefields. But like always, Aussies love it.
Mm. It's a great resource. It's just, is it in the right place? I mean, I really enjoy going there, but it's you've got so much to see on the ground that you're wondering, are we spending too much time indoors when we should be out there looking at the actual battlefield? But it's a personal view.
And as it was, now it's a full, it's effectively a half-day visit to Villers-Bretonneux now because it takes so long to see all the interesting stuff in the Sir John Monash Centre. Mm. But that's okay. It's got fantastic coffee facilities. We had our lunch there.
Oh, brilliant.
Very well run. Shout out to Jackie Bedford.
Oh, fantastic.
Best Caesar salad I've ever had. I think it was delicious.
It was
quite funny, Pete, wasn't it, that we had half the meals were baguettes and half were salad. The baguettes instantly disappeared and just left all the salads. And the poor people that came a little bit later were like, oh, having the healthy option, are we?
Which is odd because we thought they'd go for the salads.
It was delicious.
But anyway, delicious. And with the additional cakes and things that were there that Jackie...
wouldn't be a podcast if we didn't get distracted by food. It wouldn't be a podcast. But big shout out to Jackie at the cafe there. She does a great job. So stop for your lunch at the Sir John Monash Centre when you're in the Somme. What did we do then, Pete? I can't even remember.
We went to Le Hamel. So
Of course, Le Hamel.
Via the site where Mephisto, the only A7V tank in the world, was captured. Have a look at that. Monument Farm, Monument Wood, and then curling round and up to Le Hamel.
A great chat at Le Hamel about not only... Well, a really interesting chat that Pete conducted about Monash and his place in history. And again, we weren't building him up or tearing him down. We were just trying to give a fairly honest appraisal of where he fit in the big picture. And I don't think Monash would... I think Monash would be surprised. I think he'd be happy, but I think he'd also be surprised a little bit at how we sometimes portray his role in the First World War and how we remember him. So it's good to... And what we always like to do on these tours is put an opinion forward and engage what other people think. It's not about us trying to change history or change people's minds or be contrary just for the sake of it, but we'll often present a different way of looking at things and then invite people to join the discussion. And that we had a great discussion about Monash.
Yeah, it's great and very comprehensive, and that's part of the fun, is getting people involved. I always do a bit of a bomb vest, let people just say whatever they want, and then we try and sort out what's good, what's bad, what we think went well, what didn't. What was his personality, his traits. Yeah, it's great. Really good fun.
The irony for me, Pete, about Le Hamel is the Australian Memorial Park is there to tell the story of the 4th of July, 1918, the famous Battle of Hamel. But I think the more important story is what happened from that point going forward, because that's really the only place on the battlefields you can get a good perspective of the Australian involvement in the 8th of August, 1918, Day.
You're in the front line. I mean, there, Le Hamel, after it being captured, becomes the front line positions for that great assault on the 8th of August. So, it's great to tell the 8th of August story from there, which a lot of people forget. They do the Battle of Le Hamel.
I think it's the more important story.
It is.
Hamel was a good little warm-up, but it was the 8th of August that was Monash's masterpiece, if you could claim that he had one. So I like to spend a bit of time telling that story as well, because it's the only place you can really get a perspective on that ground that they crossed.
Yeah.
Great day. Well, and then we did cruise by of the 3rd Div Memorial.
Yep.
And the Red Baron crash site.
Yeah, famous always... Red Baron crash site with the chimney where you can see where his wheels clip the top of the chimney and then the red paint from his Fokker triplane on there. A little story I tell to students sometimes just to keep them interested.
None of it's true, of course. The chimney has only been there post-war, but...
It just keeps them occupied.
It does indeed. So that's a good day, a good bonus day on the Somme. And then that brings us to the last day of the tour.
Yeah, which is really a good bonus day again.
Yeah, absolutely. Started with a visit to Bertong, the Chateau of Bertong. Bertangles. Yeah. Really, we don't have to do this. People just refer to last year's podcast, can't they? Yeah. Find out. But no, it's great because I know the owner, Stanislaw, is a really good bloke, and his family has owned that chateau for a very long time. And so we get to not just go and peer through the gates at the chateau. We get to open those gates and go and have a good walk around the garden and stand on the steps where Monash was knighted by the king. This was the Australian Corps headquarters in 1918. And great visit, I think people, again, a then and now perspective.
And not so long as, I think we overdid it last time, and so I enjoyed it this time because it was a little, not quite so long. No need to go and look at every kind of facet of the whole building. And yeah, it was great. I really enjoyed it this time. I enjoyed it last time, but I just thought we got it right this time. And I think perhaps we overdid it last time. But it was, it's a great place. We reenacted. I think I was Monash.
You were Monash.
I was Monash.
Yeah. And Charles and one of the, was the king. Someone found a stick nearby and we reenacted. Live reenactment of the knighting on the steps. But it's one of those places, Pete. You walk through those gates, you see this. It is a very imposing building, a gorgeous chateau. From 1730 it was built. So famous in Australian history. We've all seen those photos of Monash on the steps. And then to actually stand there and ride in the... You know, talk about then and now photo. You're standing literally on the same...
Fantastic.
The same piece of stone that Monash was on with the king. And it's a great place.
The thing I like imagining is all those captured field guns and machine guns and everything that were all around the front of the chateau where we were actually standing. And, you can use your imagination. It's another one of those places great to tie in with a photograph.
Absolutely fantastic. And after that, two more very special stops. The underground city of...
Naor.
I've been calling it... every mangly, but Naor, the
it's
underground
normally me.
City.
It's normally me that gets these names wrong.
It is. Solidarity, Pete. I'm trying to help you out with mangling French words. No, it was great. It's the underground city. We've done a whole podcast on it before where Pete walked around
banging his head on low
roofs and really leaving a piece of himself in every little chamber he went into. But for those who haven't heard that podcast, please go back and listen to it. But it's the underground city where soldiers signed their names and all the walls of the caves, and it's still there. You can still see all their graffiti, all their signatures.
Highly recommend the visit.
It's fantastic, and it tells a very human story. It's a very human day, isn't it, that we do? We do the Chateau of Bertong. This isn't about battlefields and cemeteries and
rear areas,
death and destruction. This is about the human story. And in fact, we did an entire video on YouTube on the Matt McLaughlin YouTube channel. Which is this exactly. It's Battle of the Somme behind the lines.
That was some years ago. We could probably update that now, I think.
That was some years ago. Maybe 2019, I think. Yeah. And so we did exactly this, that we went around to all these sites we're now describing. The underground city of Noir, Naor. Jeez, why have I got that wrong so much? I can't understand it. It's like I might have had a stroke in my sleep and not realised. Why do I get that wrong so much?
What's that explain for me then?
Well, we won't go there. I'm sure. Your mental faculties are in perfect working order. But the underground city of that one, and then to which is really great, and then to Vignacourt.
Yeah.
As people would know, they'd know that name would light a bulb in their mind, and that's because this was where the photographic studio was set up, and hundreds of photos, thousands of photos of soldiers were taken, and they found the glass plates 10 years ago in an attic.
The Thuillier collection.
Yeah, so it's really great, and it's now in conjunction with Australia and Britain and the local people. They've set up a museum there to tell that story.
Yeah.
So you can actually stand in the courtyard of the farm where the photographic studio was, again, in the footsteps of the thousands of soldiers who had their photo taken. And I think there's an interesting connection there, Pete, between soldiers signing their name, again, as you put it so well, to leave a piece of themselves behind. Yeah. Not only is there a fear of death, but there's a fear of oblivion, they would be missing and there'd be no trace of them left. They were seeing it every day. So signing their name onto the walls to leave a little trace of themselves, but also get a photo taken on the battlefields to send home to their families. We still have those photos. You have them in your collection.
I do, yeah. Very, very moving. And I think that day the two sites worked so well together with very, very many of the men signed the walls and then had their photo taken and then sadly did go out to oblivion. So, yeah, it's two very moving locations. And we were treated very well at Vignacourt, weren't we, as well?
Yeah, looked after Valerie. Shout out to Valerie. Yeah. She takes great care of us.
Yeah, yeah.
They're very committed to telling that story, particularly the Australian story when Australian groups come in. So it's wonderful to see. And then a final, again, a bonus visit. We headed out to the cemetery in Vignacourt, which is one of my favourites. It just it just tells not just a great story, but so many great stories. And tell the story now, Pete, of the sculpture. Well,
there's a statue of a French soldier who is overlooking the Australian graves there, and it's very moving. I often perceive it as one of theirs, so a Frenchman looking after the Australian and British war dead, and there he is. And I think it shows it's partly the story of the village, really, of how much the village became connected to the Empire effort or the Commonwealth effort on the Western Front. But the other part of the story is in the actual the village war memorial in the middle of the town. The memorial is a young woman looking across the fields with her young son at her feet, and she is the partner, the wife of the soldier who's at Vignacourt and at the cemetery, and she's waiting for him to come home. And I think the two halves, the memorial in the cemetery, our cemetery, Commonwealth War Graves Cemetery, and then the other half in the civil cemetery, is fantastic once you know the story. And it's actually interesting. It's now been portrayed just outside the cemetery wall, so you can actually see those two things together. But well worth a visit. If you go to Vignacourt, make sure you go to the Commonwealth War Graves Cemetery there, but also to the civilian cemetery in the middle of the town.
It's it's just a great cemetery as well. It's a lot of, if you're an Aussie, then a lot of the graves there, I don't know why, but there's a real Aussie reflection there. There's a lot of...
It's part of the casualty evacuation route. So these are guys that are dying during the evacuation. And I think it's very obvious what period it is. It's 1918 and it is from the 8th of August and onwards. And a lot of the deaths there are from that period, from the 100 days. So it's a sad aspect that we're in the last 100 days of the war. But it's just very, very, very moving. And an awful lot of aircrew there, because there was a little what will be RAF station just outside the village as well, so dying in crashes and accidents, so quite a lot of pilots and observers buried in the cemetery as well. But it's just a fascinating cemetery.
A lot of inscriptions emphasising Australian identity, and one talking about an 18-year-old who's buried there, and he must have been 19 by the stage, but he celebrated his 16th birthday at Anzac, at Gallipoli in 1915, and so just incredible stories. Imagine being a 16-year-old at Gallipoli.
Incredible.
Yeah, but also Mr. Coyne. Was it Coyne? Yeah. Is that his name? Yeah, the Sergeant Coyne who threw himself on a grenade to save his comrades and was awarded the Albert Medal, the only Australian to receive that medal, which specifically for saving lives.
That led us to a whole discussion on the coach about the Albert Medal and the George Cross, and which was quite interesting, really, that people became very interested. Yeah.
Isn't that the wonderful thing about a tour, is that it invites conversation, it encourages us to pose these questions, and then it's a two-way conversation. It's not just us standing there lecturing. We get very engaged with the passengers. That's why these tours are so special.
Yep.
And that was a good example of that.
Yeah, it was.
And then back to Paris and our farewell dinner last night on a river cruise on the Seine, which was lovely as always. A great way to end a tour.
Yeah, it is.
Really lovely. And everyone had lots of red wine. The red wine flowed and the tears flowed and hugs and sing-songs, and it's a great way to end the tour.
You could tell how tired we were, though, because the coach driver on the way back was very keen that we should see some more of the sights of Paris, and they said we could stop here, and everybody just wanted to go to bed. I think we were so tired. A nice way to be tired. Well, a fantastic end to the tour.
Just a great experience. And then we were lucky enough to see quite a few of the passengers at breakfast this morning. And again, Pete, I always feel... That's why I feel genuinely sad at the end of these tours.
Always.
Because you can't even say, I'll be back next year, because there'll be a whole new group of people again, and you have the same experience that you have built all these friendships over 10 days, and they just say goodbye and everyone disappears. Yeah. It's a little bit heartbreaking every time.
It is, and it's amazing how many people get weepy, including myself. It's very, very moving.
But some very dear friendships are always made on the tour, and I said it on the first day, and it was reiterated on the last day, that people on this tour will forge lifelong friendships with people they've just met for the first time, because it's such an important shared experience. And that really sums it up, Pete. It's a shared experience. It's not a history lecture. It's not a university course. It's a shared experience of learning these stories and feeling them and experiencing them with other people who feel the same way. So that's the beauty of one of these tours, and this was a great example of that. Really good tour.
It was fantastic. One of the best, actually. Well, I say that at the end of almost everyone
when we do this. And you're off again tomorrow on our walking tour.
I am, I start again tomorrow, so just 24 hours downtime. I'm going to go back to bed, I think.
Pete's a little worn out, as we both are. It's an emotional experience. You're not talking about, you're talking about pretty emotional topics, and it does get... you do start to feel it by the end of the tour, but you've got our walking tour coming up, which will be great.
Looking forward to it.
And I should say to people, if you've enjoyed hearing about this, there are still a couple of places on the tour for next year, which we're doing the Western Front and then followed by a walking tour once again. So you can certainly check that out on our website at battlefields.com.au. But we'd love to have you on any tour. It's just great to walk the ground. If you're lucky, you'll get Pete as your historian, and whether it's a long tour or a short tour, you'll get this experience of commemorating the Anzacs on the ground where they fought and died, and that's one of the greatest experiences you can have over here, Pete.
It is, nothing better. It is. I mean, I've been doing this now for near on 20 years, and the day that I don't get moved and feel that this is worthwhile, I often joke about when you see guys walking about with the stick and the flag on the end and follow me. The day I do that is the day I finish as well.
But Pete started these tours when he was 12. 20 long years now, mate. In your early 30s, have to start thinking about doing something else.
Get a real job.
Thank you for joining us on this wonderful experience, dear listener. It's been great to bring it to you. Once again, we didn't do quite as many podcasts as we intended to, but a nice bookend start and end of the tour. But hopefully you've enjoyed this experience as we've enjoyed telling you about it, and we hope to see you all on a tour in the future.
Yep, we certainly do.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. If you would like to support the show, there's a couple of ways you can do it. Firstly, you can become a member. For a small monthly fee, you could subscribe to the show and listen to every episode ad-free, and also receive exclusive episodes directly from Pete and I. So see the link in the show notes to sign up at Acast Plus and become a member of the show. Also, if you want to make a one-off contribution, you can now buy us a coffee. Visit buymeacoffee.com/battlewalks and you can make a small contribution there. See you next week.